You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, May 13th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Nation writer Isabel McDonald on the GOP's drug testing dragnet. And more today, the buzz. President Obama in a live press conference as we speak, ostensibly about questions on the conflict in Syria. But, of course, dominating the news, the twin would-be scandals of Benghazi and the IRS, both targeting Tea Partiers. Wait a second, I'm confused. No, Benghazi wasn't targeting Tea Partiers. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have now entered into that phase where finally the Republicans have found their travel gate, Whitewater, travel gate, blue dress, as it were. We will get more into this as the show progresses, but just as the Benghazi supposed scandal begins to fall apart for the Republicans, and they spend Sunday sort of hemming and hawing on the Sunday news shows, Friday, another would-be scandal breaks of the IRS supposedly targeting Tea Party groups for added scrutiny in their applications to be tax-free social welfare organizations. We will talk about this later in the program, but I imagine the IRS thing is going to have legs only because it allows for those Republicans who are trying to seem sane on a national level to further their political careers to find common cause with those in the Republican base who are convinced that President Obama is a dictator of some sorts who has been oppressing the right wing. From his non-attempts to steal their guns and to turn this country into a socialist, I guess, Kenyan backwater. And, of course, the way they do it is through their evil organization, the IRS. The reality is far more banal. But the implications of this, I imagine, are going to be far-reaching from the ability of the Obama administration to strike a grand bargain in cutting Social Security, which I count as a positive because I think that's going to be scuttled, to decreased pressure on the IRS to actually investigate these so-called social welfare organizations. Whether they are on the right or the left, is basically these dark money groups giving money to influence elections without having to account for who is giving this money. So we will talk more about that. But in the meantime, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Isabel McDonald, who has written a fascinating piece on the growth of the drug testing industry and how it's become a self-licking ice cream cone. I don't know if she uses those words, but I just did. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program freelance journalist Isabel McDonald, who has written a piece that appeared in the April edition of The Nation magazine with help from the Economic Hardship Reporting Project entitled The GOP's Drug Testing Dragnet. Isabel, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Now, I found your piece fascinating because I had never really given much thought to the regime of drug testing that has grown up in this country and from whence it has came. But it really is the classic story of a self-licking ice cream cone of sorts. Give us a sense of the birth of drug testing in this country.
Yeah, so it is. I mean, I think your the analogy to the self-licking ice cream is great. Really, I think we have legislators first and foremost to blame. But what we've seen is it's a bit like when we talk about the military-industrial complex, referring to the way that through years of inflated spending on war making in America, we have massively profitable corporations that profit from war making that then have a huge impact on lobbying lawmakers to ensure that we keep having ongoing wars. There's a very similar thing that has happened with the we're in the area of the war on drugs, where since the 1980s there has been an institutionalization of a regime of testing that has no purpose other than to stamp out the origins of drug testing are really in a Reagan era ideology that saw marijuana use as a particularly as a particular problem in America, because under the war on drugs, it was very difficult for the government to crack down on people who were smoking pot in the comfort of their own homes, right? The government can't bust into people's living rooms if somebody is smoking a joint and arrest them. And because marijuana was the most commonly used illegal drug, it became a particular disproportionate target. And I think in my article for The Nation, there's a figure who I think really embodies this transition towards a very harsh stance on marijuana under Reagan. He's currently a big leader in the drug testing industry, and he gave a keynote address at last year's conference of the drug testing, the main drug testing lobby group. And he had started out under Nixon as the director of drug policy, for the United States government, and he had identified marijuana as a minor problem that was far less damaging than, for instance, problems of heroin addiction. And he had issued reports putting marijuana in this context as sort of a minor problem, but that should not be the focus of U.S. government policy. Now, under Reagan, there was a real shift towards a no-tolerance approach to drugs, and this made marijuana rise to the very top of the list of drugs to be targeted by the government and by the drug war. But the problem was how to cap marijuana users. And starting in the late 1980s, the solution that the government came up with, working closely with, in fact, a drug company, which is quite interesting, Hoffman La Roche, which is the manufacturer of several popular sleeping pills, they found a strategy that was based on convincing employers to drug test workers. And I think this raises a very interesting view into an area where constitutional protections don't apply, because if the government tried to make people urinate in cups to see if they might have been smoking pot, this would be struck down by the courts. There is no protection for workers from violations from, like, the Constitution does not protect you from your employer if your employer decides to engage in an unreasonable search.
No.
And so employers were recruited into a role of drug testing, and a regime of drug testing that primarily would look for signs of past marijuana use.
Now, this is interesting. So the guy you were referring to was Robert DuPont. He was the one who served as the drug policy director under Nixon and under Ford. And what's interesting, too, at that time was Nixon's so-called war on drugs was really much more in terms of expenditures focused on things like providing services to drug users so that they could get off of drugs, as opposed to actually waging this war. And it was Robert DuPont who said that marijuana was not a problem until, of course, he got into the drug testing business. And what I found fascinating from your piece, too, and I want to get back to the what's happening on the employer side and the, sort of the rationale that was sold to employers is that marijuana is really the easiest thing to test for. In other words, you could have smoked pot weeks ago and it would still be in your system, as opposed to heroin or cocaine, let's say.
Exactly. So this is the real absurdity of the drug testing regime that was institutionalized under Reagan, and which mandated urine drug testing as a central plank in the war on drugs. And the problem with urine drug testing is that it's testing for byproducts of drugs. It's testing for drugs that have been metabolized in the system. And whereas the body will, when faced with cocaine or heroin or any number of harder drugs, will treat these substances a bit like a poison and try to flush them out immediately, there is a non-psychoactive byproduct of marijuana, carboxy THC, which can stay. It's been found in the case of somebody who smokes pot regularly. If you smoke pot every day, it will accumulate in your body, your body is in no rush to get rid of carboxy THC, which is a pretty inane, harmless byproduct of marijuana. And which actually has nothing to do with whether you were high. This substance will linger in your system. And when you urinate in a cup, which is the standard procedure for drug testing, there will be no sign. If you did heroin a couple of days ago, did cocaine a couple of days ago, a lot of the time there will be no sign of that. But what there will be is any sign of pot smoke that you've come into contact with within the last short period of time. But it can actually stay in the body for up to 77 days in the case of somebody who has smoked pot on a daily basis and then has quit. They can have quit, and after 77 days, they would still test positive on a drug test. If somebody has smoked pot at a party on Saturday night, they show up for work on Monday and get drug tested, they quite likely will test positive. So this is a real problem from the standpoint of detecting whether people are under the influence of drugs. And in the context of workplaces, you would think drug testing should be about making sure that people are sober and can perform on the job. However, this is completely wrong. It's because the way that we test is exclusively looking for drugs that remain in the traces of drugs in the system, and it disproportionately nets casual marijuana smokers.
So tell me about the evolution and the sales pitch that went on essentially to employers, because it was quite effective in terms of and, you know, I guess because of my work history, I have never run into any of this, which may be just a reflection of the type of work that I've had over my career. But a huge percentage of American workers are subjected to this, yes?
Yeah, and it's historically primarily targeted low-wage workers. So if you want to get a job working at Walmart, if you want to get a job working at a fast food restaurant, you're often subjected when you apply to some form of drug testing. So it's always been a very class-based regime where a lot of professionals don't get drug tested, but blue-collar workers are often the ones who are really at the front lines. And this problematic regime of drug testing really goes hand in hand with other problems in that exist in American workplaces, like the lack of protection from being fired for no cause. So if you get tested by your boss and you are found to be positive, meaning you may have smoked pot at a party on Saturday night, then you can then just be fired, right? And so there is nothing new about this. This has been the system in place since the late 1980s. And now what we have Republican lawmakers proposing is to expand testing to people who have lost their jobs and are applying for unemployment benefits. So applying for support through a program that they have paid into through their paychecks. And what Republican lawmakers are increasingly advocating for is that people should have to pee in a cup before they can collect benefits. And I think and already we've had many laws that have been proposed. 8 states now have laws on the books requiring people applying for welfare to be subjected to not all states that have passed these laws require everybody applying for welfare, but some part of the population applying for welfare in 8 states is now going to be subjected to drug tests, and this is expanding into the area of unemployment insurance as well.
Yeah, you're right that 16 states have considered laws tying unemployment insurance benefits to drug tests. Now, from a legal perspective, how is it that if the U.S. government couldn't randomly do it to test everyone in the country force everyone to pee in a cup, as you call it, how is it? What is the legal justification to be able to do this for welfare recipients or for unemployment insurance recipients?
Well, if you talk to legal experts at the American Civil Liberties Union, they will say, well, there isn't one, and they have been persistently fighting this in the courts. And what we've seen emerge is a pattern whereby states that have passed laws that mandated that everybody applying for these programs get a drug test, we've seen that has not had success in holding up in the courts. So in the state of Florida, there was a law that was enacted by the state governor, whose wife happens to own a drug testing, a company with drug testing that conducts drug testing. So
what a tremendous coincidence.
To profit from this law. This is Rick Scott.
Yes.
And it did not last for very long. There were many welfare recipients in Florida that were forced to go to private drug testing companies to pay out of their own pockets to be tested, and then the state would then reimburse them if they tested negative, if they were found to be drug free. And the ACLU launched a lawsuit and successfully forced the state to drop this program. And what we've seen now, there are states who followed exactly in the Florida model. So Georgia passed a bill, which is now on hold pending what Georgia decides to do, given that this very similar program in Florida was found to be unconstitutional. But what we are seeing is that there are other states, like Kansas is the most recent state to have passed a drug testing law that is that targets welfare applicants and also unemployment insurance applicants. And it's based on a suspicion-based testing model, which really leaves a lot of room open to interpretation by the state as to whether somebody seems to be at risk for being a drug user. So it can be if you were fired from a job because you tested positive. We already know that the regime of workplace drug testing is extremely problematic, but that could be considered grounds for you having to pee in a cup before you collect unemployment insurance or before you collect any welfare benefits.
What else would constitute some type of suspicion? I mean, if you come in with, I don't know, you're wearing a tie-dye shirt. I mean, what else at that point would are they claiming would create a legally justified suspicion?
Well, they say that if you had any sort of past drug conviction, it can be some. There are other states that have started giving people questionnaires. So you could, if you will answer a series of questions that are supposed to determine whether you might be a drug user. This is an area where I think that we're really seeing a correlation being made between this very unfair and discriminatory regime of workplace drug testing and eligibility for benefits is in the area of unemployment insurance. Because it would be extremely difficult for any state to come out and say all unemployment insurance applicants are going to now have to start peeing in a cup before they can get benefits. This would be extremely costly. There have been proposals like this examined and discussed in the Texas, amongst Texas legislators, and the state budget office came up with an estimate of how much this would cost, and it was in the realm of millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars. It would be extremely, extremely costly. And so I think the proposals that seem to be moving forward now are a number that tie your eligibility for unemployment benefits to a record your record in the area of workplace drug testing. So for instance, if you were to go and apply for a job at Walmart and they have a policy of making everybody take a drug test and you were found to test positive, then you could potentially lose your benefits.
Now, do these private corporations
have the support to be able to look for work? So basically, the state is sort of outsourcing this extremely problematic, what would be unconstitutional for them themselves to do to the existing workplace drug testing regime.
Do in the event of a situation where you need to test before you get a job, and you fail that test, is that information kept by that corporation, and is that then sold essentially to the government in the event that to the state government in the event that they down the road, a year later, let's say, you find another job that doesn't require testing, you get fired, you get laid off, whatever it is, and you go for unemployment insurance. Is that problematic for you?
It's currently, there isn't really a, there isn't a centralized database of this, with this information. And that's what some lawmakers in some states that have been pushing for these kinds of measures are now proposing, that that employers should report people who fail a drug test to state unemployment agencies, so that the state could then cut off the potential workers' benefits.
Even if it prevents them from getting, in a
broader perspective, I think we need to look at this as in part an assault on a population that, in the context of what is being considered the greatest economic recession since the Great Depression, is a policy of blaming the victims, right? The more that we talk about potential drug users amongst the unemployed or amongst welfare applicants, the less pressure there is on lawmakers to find real solutions to this economic crisis that is extremely harmful to a lot of American families. So I think that's important. I think a very important part of the context is that there is an ideological assault that is tied to this agenda of making the unemployed and poor Americans pee in cups.
Just the other day, I think we heard Pennsylvania Governor Corbett claim that the reason why there's such joblessness in Pennsylvania is because there are few people who can pass a drug test. I mean, he literally blamed the rise in unemployment in his state because there are people, there's not enough people who are drug free to work, essentially. We're already seeing the political value of these drug tests, but we're talking about an industry here. When we talk about these drug test industries, and this is what is also scary, because as they lose some of these court cases, and it's more difficult for them to get that prize of every person who is going to apply for unemployment insurance, they have to seek out others. How big of an industry is this? I mean, how many hundreds of millions of dollars are we talking about annually?
And reading this article, I actually found it difficult to get a firm single figure that captured it. But it was there was a report in the San Francisco Chronicle maybe 8 years ago that put the industry at $2 billion, $2 billion industry. And so we're certainly talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry. And a lot of the companies that are big players in drug testing are also major pharmaceutical companies, are also major players in the private health industry in America. So it's in some ways hard to separate out what is drug testing. Just the purely drug testing component of these companies' work has been put at $2 billion, and that was several years ago.
So you've got this multi-billion-dollar industry that needs to, if it hopes to continue to grow, it needs essentially a new pool of potential drug testees, and they may very well have found it in our children.
Well, this has been a trend since the 1990s. There has been a real push by the drug testing industry to institutionalize drug testing in schools. Actually, there was a report in the newsletter of the main drug testing industry lobby group, the Drug and Alcohol Testing Industry Association. Their newsletter published a report several years ago calling school children the next frontier of drug testing. So, this is how the industry itself speaks of its constant push to find new bladders to test for profit. And what was quite interesting to me in doing this article, while I was at this industry conference in San Antonio, Texas, in 2012, I went to see one of the panels in which the focus was on student drug testing. Now, one of the three panelists, Elaine Taulay, talked about how she had first gotten into the business. So she is the founder of a Florida-based drug testing company, NMS Services. And she says she first started drug testing because she wanted to test her own son's urine. She had one teenage son she suspected might be smoking pot. This was back in 1980s when drug testing was really just starting going. And she told me that she had gone to one of the early drug testing laboratories and explained that she wanted to test her son's. And the company representative had looked at her incredulously and said, "You're going to get your 17-year-old to pee in a cup?" Like she told me that he really looked at her as if she was crazy. And she had said, "No, if I tell him that it's either your car keys or your urine, I probably will get his urine." And she had drug tested her sons. This is back in the late 1980s. And she is now a longtime board member of the Drug and Alcohol Testing Industry Association, has had her drug testing business since the late 1980s. And when I met her, she was working through her second grant from the Federal Department of Education to drug test Florida's school children.
Oh,
so
my God.
This is a program to bring drug testing to public schools in Florida. She also had recently had the chance to start drug testing welfare applicants in Florida after the short-lived Florida law was passed. And people like her who are leaders in the drug testing industry talk about a goal of testing all children from the age of 12 and up.
Wow, I got to say that on one hand, it almost, if you didn't know what it was, the business was, it sounds like a sweet little story. You know, I had a child, I realized, hey, they didn't have a proper way to stop their scooter. And I took it to a company and I'm now the head of a multi-million dollar business that makes scooter brakes or something. In this case, it's just how can we create sort of some type of draconian system of testing our kids' urine. So now the fascinating thing about this too is that not only do they see our children as a wonderful sort of profit potential, you know, sort of a just like fields of gold when it comes to profit making, but they're, I would imagine now that they are very sensitive to the idea that we're starting to see in this country a very strong movement. We're seeing two states already that is decriminalizing marijuana. And it seems to me that without marijuana being demonized, these people's business is threatened. Are they addressing that notion of, I mean, they must be fighting decriminalization in a big way.
Oh yeah, I mean from the get-go, the drug testing industry has been absolutely at the forefront of pushing against any proposal to decriminalize marijuana. And this was something that we saw, in fact, in the very early days of the industry sales pitch to employers. So Hoffman LaRoche, the drug company that had entered into almost a partnership with the Reagan administration to push drug testing agenda to employers, had also been pushing from the beginning for maybe engaged in lobbying against local state initiatives to decriminalize marijuana. I mean, it's interesting if you look at the origins of this industry with Hoffman LaRoche, a sleeping pill manufacturer, fighting at the same time to make sure that marijuana could not become accessible. So it shows a certain hypocrisy in terms of what, there's a very selective notion of which drugs are acceptable and which drugs are not acceptable, that are also tied with industry profits. And this was certainly something that came up at that is coming up in the amongst industry leaders. There's a great desire to push back against initiatives to legalize marijuana, and also to help employers to ensure that they do not desist from drug testing programs, which really leaves workers in a very vulnerable position, because even though your state might recognize your right to smoke marijuana to treat medical problems, your employer can still fire you. And this is something that has already happened, and it's very difficult for people to be able to fight against those kinds of unjust firings when executing their rights to consume medical marijuana. And so I think it's a very contradictory landscape in terms of the recent legislative trend towards decriminalization, because I think especially because a lot of employers still have workplace drug testing programs that are based on urine testing, it leaves workers in an extremely precarious situation.
And so on balance, I mean, we're still seeing this industry grow, right? I mean, I guess I got to imagine that in the event that we see more Colorados and more Washington states and we move towards decriminalization, which definitely seems to be the trend in this country, I would imagine this industry is going to get squeezed.
I think that it... Hopefully, I mean, one would hope so. And
right.
There had in since the 1980s, there has been a trend of, I mean, probably in the mid 1990s, there was a peak of employment drug testing, and I think there have been several studies that have been done looking at the trend since the 1990s. Of employment drug testing, and that had already documented a decline in drug testing, especially in certain sectors of the economy. And there were employers who told surveyors that they didn't believe in drug testing, that they didn't really see much of a value in it. And I think that this is in part related to changing attitudes towards marijuana. But at the same time, what really created the drug testing industry as a multi-billion-dollar industry is the legislation that was enacted by Reagan as a central part of the drug war, which mandated drug tests for certain federal contractors and grantees. So this means if you are an employer that is applying for certain kinds of federal funding for federal contracts, you're often required to make your workers pee in cups. Even if you don't agree with it, even if you think this is bonkers, you're still required to do it because that's the law. And in the Department of Transportation, it's institutionalized for truck drivers, for workers who fall under Department of Transportation guidelines. And there are a lot of other it's so institutionalized through federal law that I think it's going to for the industry to really decline would take a real push and a move to reverse some of the legislation that allowed this really quite unreasonable system of drug testing to take root in the first place.
Right. Well, Isabel McDonald, the piece is fascinating, and we will link to it at majority.fm. Thanks so much for taking the time today to come on and talk about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
Great. All right, Isabel, thank you very much. All right, folks, it is now that time. Wow, that went quick. We're going to head into the better half of the program. You can join us by becoming a member today. I mean, theoretically, you could become a member later in the week, and then you would go back and listen to the member archives. You can become a member at majority.fm. It is literally 33 cents a day, or approximately, I guess I should say, 33 cents a day. It is your It is your membership that keeps this show alive, that your future membership, which will allow us to provide better and more quality programming for you. For instance, this week we're gonna take a day which will be a members only day because they got to catch up on all the administrative stuff that we had to let one part time person go in the meantime, and so now we've got to pick up on that slack, as it were. Things will get a little better in the at Majority Report Inc. when Mrs. Majority Report goes back to work after her maternity leave. But until that happens, we're not quite downsizing, but we're trimming our sails, as it were, folks. So both in terms of the Majority Report Inc. juggernaut size and in the amount of sleep that we get, are we trimming our sails these days? You can also support this program by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link. Go to majority.fm, click on support the show. I know people are telling me you got to put that on the front page. Maybe we will. No, we don't have any of that stuff on the front page. We'll start doing that. We'll get there. That's one of the things maybe we'll be doing when we take that day off, because I'm also in charge of putting stuff on the front page of the blog. All right, folks. You want to be a part of this program? 646-257-3920. We will take your phone calls in a moment. 646-257-3920.
Subscribe to our YouTube
channel. Oh, yeah. Subscribe to our YouTube channels. Thank you.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. Donate your account at donateyouraccount.com.
Hey, we put out a call, too, the other day, and we got a couple of responses, and we will get to you later in the week. But if you are a Reddit user... we've had a lot of success with stuff that has been posted on Reddit. Some of the clips that we cut from the first half and the second half of the show. And if you're a Reddit user and want to get on our distribution list, send us an email. Just put in the subject line Reddit user, and we will put you on that list that we are developing as we speak. All right, folks. You can IM me at Majority FM. I am firing up the IM machine. See you in the better half. Say to the blue.